Good morning. Welcome to EE509, Data Network Protocols Analysis and Simulation. Hopefully that's where you mean to be. I'm Jennifer McManus. I am co-teaching this module with Connor McArdle. So our contact details are both there. We're same floor, same hall, obviously different phone numbers and emails. I'm happy to talk to you at pretty much any time that I'm around, but I can be a bit hard to pin down at times. So I have office hours posted on my office door, during which I'll be present. Or if that's not, doesn't work for you, your best bet is to email me, and I'm happy to make an appointment with you at any time. Okay. So, in general, I think it's reasonably easy to communicate with me, harder to catch me. Another option, of course, is to just catch me after class, and again, we can either deal with whatever it is there or, you know, make some time to meet more for a more substantive discussion. Now, all of the module course material is available via Moodle. So are you aware of Moodle? Okay, I see a lot of nods anyway. Just go to moodle.dcu.ie, and if you're registered for the course, you should see it popping up as an item to select on the left-hand side of your screen. Sometimes it takes a little while after you register for it to actually sort of connect. If you're having problems for any reason, again, you can send me email. I can at least temporarily give you the enrollment key, which will allow you to view all the notes. What else will be on Moodle? Well, pretty much everything. Assignments will be posted there, and you will hand them in through the turn-in facility. All of these lectures are being recorded via Camtasia, so the Camtasia versions will be available. I can't swear that they'll be available right after the lecture, but within a couple of working days of the lecture, all of the Camtasia recordings should be posted. And any additional material like problem sets, etc. It will all be there. It tends to roll out sort of on a weekly or couple of week basis, so you won't see the whole course straight off. Like a lot of engineering subjects, we tend to at least tweak our notes every year. So again, it's not all available instantly. And come on, wake up. And the nice thing about recording things is you get a permanent record of all the little technical glitches that occur. What is the matter now? Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so what are the module aims? Well, the overall broad goal is to familiarize you with the major tools used to design and analyze the performance of networks and network protocols. And these are basically mathematical tools, specifically queuing theory and simulation. Okay. And so as you go on, we'll again be discussing each of these, not in huge depth, but in some depth, and then applying the sort of results we get, or either analytically or through simulations, we'll apply it to network-related problems. Okay. Unfortunately, what we don't do, we don't have time to do, is to actually sort of do a full review of networks and sort of basic networking. So I'm pretty much assuming that you have some background, or if you don't have the background, that you're willing to go pick up a textbook and have a quick look at it. You know, when we go through examples, we will describe the either protocols or the concepts that we're addressing, but it won't give you sort of a uniform view of networks. Today I will do a review, a very whirlwind review of sort of the highlights or lowlights of networking. And so I'm hoping that at the end of this you're nodding and going, oh yeah, seen that before. If you're not, again, you need to go and pick up just the basic networking textbook. Okay, so what we'll look at today is, well, the view of networks as communication services. So what are the characteristics essentially of the provisioning of connections, and then how are these implemented? And again, the key concept there is through this layered architecture, the OSI model or the TCP/IP model, whichever one you're having, the ideas are the same. Okay, so if you look at the module descriptor, you will see a number of learning outcomes. And so basically, we again will be describing the core analytic and simulation techniques that are applied over and over again in networks. And then we will be applying these to specific problems. Okay. And so it does give you a pretty good grounding in sort of what you want to do if you need to answer performance questions about networks. We also compare the results that you can get using simulations and analysis. And so the bottom line there is that in order to make analysis, in order to write down a few formulas, even complex formulas, you're going to have to make a certain set of assumptions. If you run a simulation, you'll probably make a slightly different set of assumptions. So at the end of this, we hope that you'll be able to compare what assumptions have you had to make versus what sort of results can you get out of the different techniques. Okay. So the basic syllabus, we'll have an introductory lecture today. Then we will go into the mathematical fundamentals, starting with fairly basic probability. So again,
sorry, can I put my recording just next to you?
Sure, although these are being recorded.
Oh, already, yeah? Well,
yeah, they're being recorded via Camtasia.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, where was I there? Okay. Okay, so we'll start fairly basic mathematical fundamentals, so probability, moving that through the basic theory of queues. Similarly, we'll start simulations from the ground up. We don't assume that you know anything. And then we'll start examining sort of, again, various problems that can be addressed using either simulations or mathematical analysis. Okay, just one last piece of admin before I, whoops, actually several pieces of admin, two pieces of admin. First of all, again, I think I've said this, there are no absolute prerequisites for this module. Again, we start at quite a basic level in terms of the queuing and the simulation. But having said that, I think a good few of you, the bulk of you, might be in the Masters of Telecoms program, so it would be very much to your benefit to have some idea of networking at least an undergraduate level, so things like layered models, what protocols are associated with these layered layered architectures, etc. And so hopefully you have that already. If you don't, then definitely look at some basic networking book and have at least a skim through and get an idea of what I'm talking about. And finally, in terms of being able to do the assignments, you pretty much will need to know some programming language. We're making a working assumption that you will be programming in Java. And the sort of exact phrasing of the assignments and the tutorial support will be primarily geared for being able to write your code in Java. There's nothing too deep about what you need to know, but you know, if you've never seen a program before, you might be in trouble. Having said that, it's entirely possible to write, to do the assignment in any other higher level language that you happen to like better than Java. C would work just as well. I thought about doing it in Fortran, if anybody's really an ancient in sort of the dinosaur age, but it's possible to do it, and we're happy to sort of accept any offering in any language. But if you have no programming, then you are going to have some trouble with this assignment. Okay, so the last bit of admin before we get going is just about how I tend to run the physical lectures here, and that is that I cannot talk for 3 hours, and I sincerely doubt you guys want to listen to me running on straight for 3 hours. So typically, I will go for something over an hour and 15, an hour and 20 minutes. Then we'll take a 15-minute break, and we'll come in for probably more like an hour the second time round. Those times are sort of variable according to exactly where a good break is, but we will call a break in the middle of the lecture somewhere. So. Okay. So, does anybody have any sort of administrative questions before I go on? Okay, great. Again, just anytime, let me know. Anytime offline, that is. Okay, so the rest of the lecture today will be, again, a sort of a weird whirlwind introduction to some of the big network concepts, leading into a bit to what we're getting at, which is the analysis of network performance. So I'm going to start with essentially a quick timeline. This is not something that I would ask you in an exam. It's just to put, again, a bit of context onto what we're talking about. So you get this network history, which hopefully brings us somewhere up to where we are today with networks. We'll then look at, again, a fairly abstract view of networks in terms of the data requirements, the services, so how the networks can offer connectivity, and, again, the layered architecture, so how are they arranged in order to achieve this connectivity, and where what enters in that we need to know about. And protocols, again, are tied up with that architecture in the sense that every layer has protocols associated with it. I'm not going to say how any of them work or even give you a list of them, but, again, at certain points we will start discussing specific ways of going about doing things. And finally, we'll look at sort of a very simplified view of network performance, again, one that you would get in an undergraduate course. The goal here is just to get some idea of the types of issues that arise in networks, and why we look at it at all, and then we'll wrap up with just saying we can use simulation and analysis to help us. So what we're dealing with is telecommunication, and so tele means at a distance, and so the issues that we see arise because of the distances involved. Okay, and because we can't just string a wire between me and every other human being on the planet. The dominant modes of communication are either telephones or computers, and as all of you know, these days the distinction between telephones and computers is not as great as it was even 10 years ago, certainly not like it was 20 years ago. They actually all begin to look very similar these days in terms of what they do and what their goals are. Okay. So, people have always done their best to communicate at a distance. And so before we had electricity, we had methods of communication, whether that was smoke signals, beacon fires, semaphores, guys jumping on horses and riding from one station to another, relaying messages. Okay. And why do I mention that? Well, only because there are some parallels with modern communication systems. We have, in these old systems, we have the notion of a protocol. So we have to have some agreement on what signals mean and what action should be taken upon receipt of signals. Okay. We have physical message transmission from point to point. Again, whether that's through the smoke signal or an actual messenger, and so visual or physical, And we have the concept of relaying. So messages have to be forwarded from point to point so that we can get out of line of sight or out of the distance that one horse can ride, etc. Okay. And, you know, those really are the basics of what networks do today. They do it in a much different way, but that's what they do. Okay. So, the first sort of modern network to arise was the telephone network. And this came in the 1800s. Okay. And this will obviously then be contrasted with the second network to arise, which would be computer networks. Again, what we see today is the emerging of the functionality and the management of telephone and computer networks, but historically they were very different animals. Okay. So, if we look at this timeline again, the first voice signal was transmitted in 1876, roughly, and commercial networks were available as of the 1890s. So 60 years later, the middle of the 1900s, things became much more like what we know today. We got direct distance dialing, so instead of having an operator, doing the relay for you, plugging in the switch to the right way, we had mechanical switches, electronic switches, and we introduced digitized voice signals. Okay. And since then, the technology has been changing. In the late 70s, we had the first commercial cellular network, so the first wireless communication, wireless telephone communication. In the 80s, the network core went optical and fully digital. And in the 90s, again, we've seen network convergence where we integrate IP-based traffic, so computer data along with our voice data. So, from the historical perspective, what we see is that these networks have been around a long time, that they were created for a single purpose, to transmit voice connections. These voice connections have the characteristic of requiring pretty much a constant amount of bandwidth. And so the transmission mode that was developed for these was circuit switched and connection oriented. And we'll return to what that means, but essentially connection oriented means that, again, you made a connection between the end users. And circuit switched meant you reserved a fixed amount of resources then along the route of that connection. And again, if you have voice communication, think of digitized voice communication, you have 64 kilobits per second requirement constant, then this made a lot of sense. So, approximately 100 years after the start of voice networks, telephone networks, a new form of communication arose, and that was computers communicating with each other. And so computer communication had a much different character or flavor to it than voice communication. And typically, what computers were trying to send to each other in order to talk to each other was not a stream of data, but rather messages. So fixed chunks of data. One of the earliest applications, for instance, would have been connecting dumb terminals to a mainframe. So what you're sending to the mainframe is something that's typed in from the keyboard, not a continuous flow of data. Okay, so in order to facilitate that, a different mode of data transport was proposed called packet switching. So you bundled up your message into a packet and you sent that packet on its way through the network. And so historically, what we can see is that compared to telephone networks, there's been an extremely rapid development of computer networks. And so the basic packet switching principles were developed in the 60s primarily, by the early 70s, we have our first basic network, and we're running our first basic programs, including things like email. And so, again, the work has progressed fairly rapidly. The concept of multiple access networks was developed in the early to mid 70s, and that's sort of the basis for most local area network, communication via local area networks. And then, again, various bits have been tried or developed since. Okay. And so, to contrast with our telephone networks, where we have this idea of offering voice connections, so with a guaranteed reserved resources. The computer networks were developed along a much different line, with minimal centralized control, a best effort service model, so a telephone network guarantees your connection that wasn't considered to be useful, stateless routers, so again, just not keeping track of connections, and decentralized control. Okay. So, because of the nature of the data being transmitted, the design principles for the internet were significantly different from telephone networks. Okay, and just to conclude, what we can say is that something must be right because it works, and as of earlier in this year, the internet had over 800 million hosts, approximately 50 billion pages. That tends to fluctuate a bit. And, oh gosh, I lost how many billion users, but billions of users. Okay, if you click on that, you'll find out actually how many users. Sorry about that. Okay. So, it works. Historically, we've had these two different ways of going about things, but the line between the two sorts of networks these days has blurred significantly, and it's pretty much suitable to look at. Well, you still need to be aware that there are sort of some basic paradigms that might be different for one or the other reason. Okay. So, we're again going to look at sort of various components or pieces of the network. We will look a bit at connection-oriented systems. We'll have, in particular, we can look at the analysis of switches. Is still sort of significant. So we'll look at sort of how, if you are allocating resources, how can you sort of estimate blocking or your ability to get a resource. So that would come from this connection-oriented telephony model. On the other hand, we'll also be analyzing medium access control protocols. And again, that comes from the computer level. We're also going to be looking at network queues. And again, a lot of what comes out of that has to do with the computer-generated traffic. So the traffic models and then how they input into networks of queues. So it's good to sort of keep in the back of your mind anyway that there are sort of two different flavors of networks, and when we're looking at results, they may apply more to one or the other flavor of a network. Okay, so just to throw yet another view of networks at you. Again, we've got this idea we can think of computer networks or telephone networks. We can also think of networks as being divided into the edge and the core. So access networks and data transport networks. So the edge is designed to give users access into the networks, and then the core is concerned with bulk data transport, so just shoving bits through as efficiently as possible. Okay. And what we'll see is that at the edge, the users are going to have different requirements for their data transport. So if you're having a voice conversation, or if you're streaming a video, or if you're sending an email, you know, exactly what needs to happen varies. For instance, streaming video, you need to get it there regularly with email. Well, if it just sort of dribbles through sporadically, it doesn't matter. And then this, again, is contrasted with the core. And the core tends not to look at individuals and what individual requirements are, but rather at sort of global pictures. The core, an individual wants their data to get through the network. The core wants as much data as possible to be transported through the network, and you know, happy days if it actually happens to be the individual's data, if it's not tough. Okay. So, again, we'll see this arising pretty much, some of the analysis we'll do is at the edge, sort of when you look at local area networks, you're really looking at the edge. And then some of the analysis, again, is at the core. And we'll look at performance in terms of, again, globally, the network. Are the resources being used efficiently? And also, sort of, you can look at it individually. So how bad can things get for an individual? Or how good? Okay, so there's a lot of details obviously glossed over in that network history. Again, the main thing to tuck into the back of your mind is telephone networks versus computer networks. We're now going to abstract away from pretty much all of the details and try and give a framework under which we can discuss the details of what goes on. And we will do that in terms of assuming that all data is digital, so we may have voice streams, but at least they're digital data streams. And then we have pretty much everything else which is going to get bundled up into packets, so into discrete chunks of data. Okay. Now, at a very high level, we can think of the communications as having a number of components. We have our message. So computer one wants to through the sender wants to talk to computer two, the receiver. So he sends a message. And as we said, there has to be some protocol by which the sender and receiver know what information to send and how to interpret that information. Okay. So once you're dealing with computers, you need a set of rules by which the two computers agree to interact with each other. Okay. So, as we touched upon in the history, the data is transmitted over the network to serve a wide variety of purposes. And so, the data has different characteristics depending on what these purposes are. For instance, persistence and data rates. So is it a one-off? Is it a stream of data? What resources do you need to transmit it through the network? And then it also has requirements. So in terms of delay, loss, variance on delay, and reliability. Okay. So basically, networks aren't going to have a lot of tools for providing for these requirements. There's some flexibility in how resources are allocated. Typically, applications themselves sort of add additional mechanisms to try and deal with the vagaries of the network. What we'll be interested in, again, is we might not be able to do anything about these, but we want to be able to tell the user what to expect. Okay. So can we say what the average delay a user of this network will experience? But it tends not to be that hard. Can we say what the variance the user might experience? That's a little, on the delay, that's a little harder. I say this isn't hard, but again, depending on how we characterize the data going into the networks, it can actually get quite complicated. Okay. So we view the network as providing services for data transport, and these services are defined in terms of connectivity and reliability. And so in terms of connectivity, we have either connection-oriented services or connectionless services. And for a connection-oriented service, a connection is established, sort of from point A to point B, and it persists for the entire duration of an interaction, so data can flow back and forth multiple times over this connection. Okay. And this was modeled on the telephone system. Again, historically, the service that a telephone would offer is just that. You pick up the receiver, you dial your number, you ring through, somebody picks up at the other end, you've established the connection, and you can talk as long as you want. The contrast, again, is connectionless service. And here, each message is sent independently of any other message, going from sender to receiver, even if it's the same sender and receiver. So you send one message and that's it. The next message you send is it's a totally new story. Okay. And so, the contrast again is for connection-oriented services, the data arrives in the order that it was sent, and it's sent along that connection, and no further identification is required. On the other hand, for connectionless service, each piece of data has to be identified specifically with the receiver's address, and if you have a sequence of communications, they don't necessarily have to arrive in the same order they got sent out in. Okay. So, additionally, you can characterize your service in terms of reliability. So, is there a guarantee that data will be received correctly or not? And typically, if you want some sort of guarantee, the only way you can get it is if the receiver acknowledges the receipt of the data. And this will introduce extra performance hits, overhead, and delay. And so, again, if you've had any sort of networking course, you will see this in two points. You'll see this at the data link layer, which is not what we're really dealing with, but you have the ARQ protocols. But more what we're dealing with here is the end-to-end, the transport layer. And so there, again, forgetting telephone models, you have TCP versus UDP. Okay, so you have one service which provides the connection, make sure everything gets there correctly and in order, and another service that doesn't. Okay. So, that comment leads on to the note that the communication services are based on the end-to-end properties and not how the bits are actually transported through the network. Okay. So, any network can offer more than one type of service. And different networks can offer different services. So we tend to say telephone circuit switched, internet packet switched, telephones connection oriented, internet not so much, but we know the internet, as I said, just does support connection-oriented services, and similarly, telephony, where you can send just packet data over a telephone network, even if it is establishing the connection. Okay. So, anyway, we have this very abstract idea of network services, which again break down along the lines of connection-oriented or connectionless. So, the next question that arises from the idea that any network can provide any service is, how do the networks allocate resources to move data from point A to point B. And so we can think back to our smoke signals even. We have data being relayed along some path, potentially. There could be multiple paths that you can take through the network. And at each of these nodes, we need some resources. So we need to be able to send our data out along some link. Okay. And so the two big issues with how the network is sent out along the link, one is multiplexing, so it's possible to have multiple pieces of data going over the same physical link at one time, and which is nice, but the second is switching. So the question of how do we again arrange to send the data out on these links. Okay. And so switching will come in two basic flavors: circuit switching and packet switching. For circuit switching, we will define some path through the network, and we will reserve all our resources along that path initially. Okay. And so you can see this is ideal for connection-oriented services, but it's not the only way of providing connection-oriented services. And so the resources are the bandwidth in the links and also the switching capacity. So basically you can't send things in the same input port or out the same output port at any given time. Okay. So the characteristics of circuit switching are that we don't share our links. We have, therefore, a guaranteed performance. If you've set up a link, a pipe with a certain bandwidth, that's the bandwidth you get. But you pay the price of having to set up the connection. Okay. And so this is ideal for regular traffic, for instance, digitized voice. Okay. And not so ideal for bursty traffic. If you think about trying to transmit a packet, well, what are our options? We could set up a new circuit every time we wanted to transmit a packet, but then we have this delay in setting up the circuit, so that's a delay per packet then. Otherwise, we could set up an end-to-end reserved link and hold it for the duration of all the data transfer, but if the data transfer is sporadic, then you're not making good use of the network resources. Okay, now, again, just to mention, it doesn't really come too much into play in this module, I think. When we say reserving resources, any physical link can be split up into essentially sublinks, and those sublinks then don't need to be shared. And the two main ways of doing this are frequency division multiplexing, so you transmit your signal at different frequencies, or time division multiplexing. You divide time up into time slots and transmit the signal along an allocated time slot. Okay. So, again, it's not really going to come into play. Just be aware, when we say resources, it's not the whole physical link, but a portion thereof. Okay. So, again, historically, telephone networks were circuit switched, and therefore there were issues with transmitting computer data, and this led to a different view of the world and a different way of transmitting the data, which is referred to as packet switching. So again, we have pieces of data that need to be sent, and we bundle that piece up and send it into the network. And the resources are allocated on then an as-needed basis. So when I send a packet into the network here, I don't reserve a resource here. The packet arrives at a node, and then the node sends it out, so it gives it the resource as the resource becomes available. Okay. And so, again, the plus of this is that's efficient for the network. They're not having to let resources lie idle when somebody could be using them, some packet could be using them. But it does lead to some performance issues. In particular, at any given node, the number of packets needing resources, so needing to go out, arriving at the node, then needing to go out on links, may be more than the node's capacity to transmit at any given time. In that case, what's going to happen? The packets are going to form a queue. Where did I talk? And so you now have some idea that packets wait, potentially. Okay. And then additionally, we have what's called a store and forward delay, which means that even if the network is free, nobody else is using it, the way the packets are transmitted is that they're fully received along at a given node before they're transmitted out. Okay. And so what you can see is that you introduce a transmission delay then at each of the individual nodes. Okay. So on the other hand, what you don't have is the hit of having to set up a connection. Okay. And so again here, this is just the idea of store and forward. Again, the packet can't be transmitted out before it's been fully received at a node. And so again, you have this delay. This is contrasted with circuit switching, where again, you have this sort of big delay in setting up a circuit potentially, but then once you have the circuit set up, you can send all your data in one go. So sort of it's which one it would be more efficient, it depends on, again, the nature of the data. Okay. So we have this idea of store and forward. And then when the packets arrive at the node uses what is called statistical multiplexing to forward them on along the links. And all statistical multiplexing means, again, is that if is that the node will forward the packet as soon as the resource is available. Okay. And so typically you again have a queue of packets and the node serves the queue. If there is no queue, then the node will again immediately forward the packet. Okay. And so you have a much more efficient use of the resources then, in the sense that as long as somebody is waiting, the resource will be used. Okay. So, again, depending on the characteristic of the data usage, potentially packet switching enables more users into the network at the cost potentially of congestion in portions of the network and delay. Okay, so this is a pretty simple example. You have a 1 megabit per second link, so that's your resource. And for instance, if we had 100 users, each of whom required 100 kilobits per second, when they required anything, but only 10% of the time did they actually require anything, so they're transmitting 10% of the time, not all the time, then if you use circuit switching, you could get 10 users in there. So 10 100 kilobit per second channels could be reserved, or circuits could be reserved. But if they're only active 10% of the time, then at least statistically, there's no reason a lot more users couldn't use the network. If you had 35 users, the probability that more than 10 are active at a time would be 0.004%. So a very small chance of needing more resources than are available at any given time. And obviously, even if at some point there's too many active users, well, they can just wait and queue. Okay. So, having said that, that's sort of a very specific example, and it relies on specific characteristics of the user, specifically that they're only active 10% of the time, so they have this bursty characteristic. So depending on the types of data being transmitted, this may or may not be a good assumption. Again, if you think of something like a streaming video, then you're going to have 100% activity, more or less, you need to be transmitting or receiving all of the time. Okay. So, within packet switching, there are, again, two different models. There are what is called datagram and virtual circuit packet switching. And so datagram packet switching corresponds to this idea of any piece of data you want to send, you address it and send it along its way. And somehow the network, using statistical multiplexing and routing, etc., gets it to the other end. Virtual circuit packet switching then would be a halfway house between proper circuit switching and packet switching. Again, you will provide a virtual circuit in the sense that you will transmit the data in packets, but it will arrive sort of along, it'll travel along the same route and arrive in order, so very much like a circuit. Okay. So, datagram packet switching again. Each packet is treated individually within the network. So, at the sender end, even if they're sending the packet to the same place, they address each packet separately, send it into the network separately, and then it travels through the network along potentially different routes to arrive at the receiver, potentially out of order, or even potentially not at all. Okay. And so in this case, we don't have a connection set up. There's flexible routing through the network, and we, again, don't reserve any resources. And so this is ideal for that short-lived, bursty traffic. Virtual circuit packet switching is still packet switching. Data is still broken up into packets, but now the route that the packets take is pre-specified. Okay. So, as with circuit switching, where you would determine a route through the network, with virtual circuit packet switching, you'd still determine the route. What differs is that the resources along the route are not pre-allocated, so they're not reserved. So statistical, at any node along the route, statistical multiplexing is still used. Okay. So what you get is now the sender labels the packets according to this virtual circuit, according to the route through which they'll travel, or some identifier of that route, and they will arrive at the far end in order. Okay, so you have established a connection between A and B, and the data will arrive along that connection in order, but it will still have been packetized. Okay. And so this is seen as being sort of the halfway house between sort of datagram packet switching and circuit switching. So it's circuit switching, it's circuit switching in a packet switching environment. Okay. And so what's the use of all that? Well, again, it's can enable various services to be offered more easily. Okay. So, to wrap up the network services section, we have two very different paradigms for transporting data through the network: circuit versus packet switching, sort of resource reservation versus no resource reservation. Those suit different types of data better or worse. When we move on to talking about network architectures, we are going to be talking about packet switching networks. Okay. The layering gets quite strange in circuit switching, in pure circuit switching networks, and doesn't apply in quite the same way. So layered architectures will refer now to packet switched networks. And so finally, we'll have a look at next the idea of layered architectures, and then finally we will talk a bit about performance, so what are the requirements of applications, and more specifically what problems do the networks themselves and how they're designed impose. And that will be pretty much it. So we'll take our break now. We'll return again to talk about the layered architecture and then finally some performance issues for networks.